additional training that they can put their mentor. And when they request this additional training, they put their
team, including the other directors of the affected company. And they've actually agreed to that, to the backlistings, to the extent that they won't be able to do business with the state again. But out of that incident, we, in terms of the loss to the organization, we haven't lost anything, in the sense that the work that they did, were able to benefit as an organization from it. So that's what happened as far as the recognition is concerned. That's the sequence of events. I've done the introduction of the team. This is the layout of the presentation I'm going to be giving today. I'll just touch briefly on the mandate of the Mine Health and Safety Council. The core mandate of the council is to advise the Minister of Mineral Resources on issues of occupational health and safety, which includes issues of reviewing of legislation, mainly the regulations, and promoting the culture of health and safety, conducting research, oversee research to give us something to be a basis of us being in a position to really advise Minister in terms of the challenges that are experienced by the industry, and also to liaise with various bodies that are there to assist us in terms of improving occupational health and safety in the mining industry. In crafting our strategy and developing our strategic objectives, what we are normally taking into account or always take into account is the alignment with the national development plans. So the slide there indicates specific sections in terms of the national development plans, and then and how are we actually responding to that in terms of the strategic objectives that we have. We're also taking into account the issues of the 9-point plan, and on the right here of the slide, it also indicates our response in terms of our strategic objective to the 9-point plan. This is basically the structure of Council, Mine Health and Safety Council. It's a really an enhanced structure, taking into account that one of the areas we're going to be focusing on is the implementation of the Center of Excellence. It's a tripartite structure from the board through the committees, where you have the members of the state being represented, organized labor, and the employers. So the main focus of the Center of Excellence will be on the issues that we've been battling with over the years, which deals with the issues of dissemination and commercialization of research outcome, mainly the implementation of the research outcome. So there's going to be the real focus in this current financial year, of which we're expecting to have a fully functional Center of Excellence, which is part of the Mine Health and Safety Council, by end of April next year. In terms of our first mandate of delivering against our mandate, as I've indicated earlier, and also on the summit action plan that the plans that come out of the summit that we have every 2 years, in terms of making sure that we come up with a plan of really continuously improving occupant safety in the industry. These are basically the thrust areas. On occupational safety, we are mostly focusing on rock falls, which is a major contributor in terms of accident, rock burst, which are regarded as the underground earthquakes, explosions and fires, machinery and transport. Mr. Mbodambi has actually touched on these areas, indicating these are the areas that we are mainly having challenges. Occupational health, mainly we are focusing on airborne pollutants, physical hazards, occupational diseases, and then on human factors, behavioral safety, and culture transformation. We've got the culture transformation framework that we are actually implementing as Mine Health and Safety Council and all the stakeholders. Chairperson and honorable members, this is just the highlight of the research outcomes or the achievements that we had in this in the financial year that we are reporting on. The first one I want to be highlighting on is the identification of opportunities for improving barring. Barring in the mining industry, or especially underground, is regarded as a first line of defense. You know, if you have to deal with falls of ground, which is a major issue. So with the what Mr. Mbonambi was saying, that there was a surge in the terms of accidents, you know, the trend started basically last year towards the end of the year. And in the previous years, we said most of the outcomes of the investigation indicated that the initial examination of the working place was not done properly. So we had a project to look into that to say, what is it that people are not doing that they're supposed to do? So we came up with some sort of a training program. There's a number of modules that we've actually developed in dealing with the issues of barring. We also had a project that we worked with CGS, which deals with the integration of South African National Seismograph Networks in terms of the monitoring of the seismic events underground. We have completed that project. And we're at the stage of really implementation of the outcomes. We've got screens. We're going to be having screens at the head office of DMR. We also identify other two regional offices, which is going to be the Joburg office in Gauteng and the Klerksdorp office in the northwest, where we are having most of these issues. We also completed a project that relates to the adverse impact of associated with dust emission, especially from the gold mines. If you look at some of the tailings, the tailing dams that we have in this country, they are located close to communities. You can see the effects in Accra when it's windy. You know, you can't even see about 300 meters ahead of you. So you can imagine the types of exposures people are exposed to. I'll be touching a bit on that. The next slide, as I've indicated earlier, Chairperson, it deals with the safe barring practices training modules. There are about six modules that we've developed. We'll be soon be implementing those modules and popularizing them across the mining industry, and we are also engaging with Mining Qualification Authority to see if we can make it part of the training programs or the training modules that they have. The slide on the left is an indication of some of the locations of the tailing storage facilities close to communities. And one of the main outcomes or recommendations, which are still going to be formalized and going to the minister, is that in terms of development of communities, you know, the development of the recommendation that we need to have buffer zone between communities, and if the proper rehabilitation has not been done as yet. And also recommendation in terms of the vegetation of these dams and also rehabilitation. On the picture on the right, I've already indicated the work that we've already done in terms of the integration of national networks. We are also looking at extending the projects to the platinum belt, because We've seen that the mining in the platinum area is actually getting deeper, and we are going to have the same challenges as we had in the gold mines of seismicity. So that will be a proactive way of dealing with seismicity in that area. In terms of us delivering on the mandate and the summit action plan, there are a number of legal advice documents in terms of regulations and the mandatory guidelines that we've sent to the Minister of Mineral Resources, of which he has come back to us and agreed that yes, we need to go ahead and implement the recommendation, of which we are in the process of popularizing the guidelines. Guidelines that Mr. Bonambi touched earlier on the right to refuse dangerous work. There is a program that will be working with DMR in terms of the implementation of such guidelines. I've touched earlier, Chairperson, about the Center of Excellence, which we strongly believe that is going to be the game changer in terms of how we are going to be conducting business, especially when it comes to the implementation of the research outcome. So in previously we had a challenge that we had research outcome, but the implementation was not what we wanted to see. It will also touch on issues of building research capacity in this country, which we have lost over the years, especially with the focus of historical disadvantaged South Africans and also the institutions. What we are actually doing is part of the research that we do. There is a requirement that where the researchers that are involved or organizations that are conducting the research on our behalf, they need to make sure that they partner with other institutions in terms of making sure that there is that capacity building. And I also like to report, Chairperson, that we have actually finalized, or the business plan has actually been approved by Council. We are at the stage of implementation of the business plan, of which it's expected that come April 2017, the Center of Excellence will be fully functional. One of the strategic objectives that we have is the promoting and communicating MHSC programs in terms of creating occupational health and safety awareness. The plan includes the roadshows that we do or engagements that we have at regional tripartite forums, commemoration of mining disasters, hosting conferences, for instance, a Women in Mining conference, and also participating in exhibition and presentation in mining in Durban, various conferences and summits in terms of the selling the work of the council out there. Still on the promotion, this is an example of the promotional events that we have that was in Impalale last year, in December 2015, where we partners with a number of stakeholders, the Department of Health, National Health Labs, and ORAM, which deals mainly with the research on TB and HIV. So this is some of the things that we did, the initiatives that we had in that area of Lephalale. Earlier this year, we also had an event or a session which was there. We called it the Occupational Health Dialogue, which was mainly focusing on the issues of occupational health, which are the issues that we've been neglecting as part of occupational health and safety for a very long time. Which the theme of the dialogue was making sure that we take issues of occupational health beyond compliance. It doesn't become only a compliance issue, but it becomes the manner or the way of conducting business in the mining industry, to really start putting resources and focus into issues of occupational health. Also taking into account that if you look at occupational diseases, you might find that the people who die from occupational diseases, they far surpasses those who are dying from accidents as a result of mining activities. One area where we haven't done very well, honorable members and chairperson, is the issue of improving turnaround times for procurement of services and ensuring that we deliver on the mandate. Take into account that most of our research or services that we have, we are outsourcing them. But I must say, chairperson, in terms of the actions and the initiatives that we actually put in place, already in the first quarter and the second quarter of this financial year, we are actually seeing the results of the efforts that you've actually put in place, of which some of them are indicated on this slide. Employee performance, Chairperson, I think we are fine, but there's still a lot to be done in that area in terms of making sure that we really improve in managing the performance of the organization. In terms of, that's another strategic objective, delivering MHSC projects on brief, on budget, on time, because we are a project-based organization. We haven't done that badly, Chairperson. I think we've done relatively well in that area, but I think there is still some work to be done, also taking into account that the challenges that we have in terms of us being able to source those services that we need. And I think what is important, Chairperson, is that we are on track in terms of the implementation of the Center of Excellence, and we're also finalizing or doing some dealing with small issues in terms of us automating the management of projects, some teething challenges that we have, but we're actually dealing with them. In terms of making sure that we improve the efficiency in terms of management, project management. Chairperson, there was a concern that was raised about the AG relating to us being in a position to speedily make information that they require available. Yes, we admit, Chairperson, that we had that challenge, but it's something that we are really seized with and really working on to make sure that information or records are readily available. So there are a couple of initiatives that we have, including the manual electronic file plan that we have developed. We've started implementing it to make sure that we really improve in that area. And things the way they are currently, I think we are getting there. In terms of developing staff and council members in terms of the skills and the competencies that they need, we haven't really achieved in that area. So we have experienced some challenges in terms of availability of people that we've been identified and members to go for training as a result of the various commitments, including work commitments that they haven't really planned for initially, but we actually find a way of actually dealing with that in terms of making sure that come end of this financial year there is a serious improvement. Chairperson, last year when we were here, that was on the next slide, improving organizational climate and creating a conducive environment. It was one of the areas that we find ourselves wanting. We didn't do well, but we promised the members that we will be implementing a couple of initiatives to make sure that at least there is some improvement in that area. From where I'm sitting, Chairperson, and based on the feedback in terms of the climate survey, I think we are really making roadways. We are not there 100%, but there is still work to be done, but we are getting somewhere, Chairperson. On issues of financial sustainability and availability, viability of council and utilization of financial resources, the biggest challenge that we have was the issue of utilizing the surplus. And when it comes to the us being in a position to be collecting levies, I think in terms of the collection rate, I think we've done well. We had a target of 95%. I mean, of 90%, we managed to collect about 95% of the levies. We have actually put strategies and plans in place in terms of dealing with the issues of under expenditure and the surplus fund. And we have engaged with National Treasury and the National Treasury has actually come back to us in terms of the suggestions of what needs to be done going forward. I will be touching on that later, Jefferson. If you look at the slide that talks to the financial performance, in terms of what has been planned in terms of the use of the surplus funds, it indicates the improvement that we have made compared to the end of the financial year that was ending in 2015 and 2016. We've managed to eat a bit into our surplus in terms of what has been approved as a surplus spending plan. I've indicated earlier, Chairperson, that the council or the board has approved the spending plan to deal with the surplus, also addressing very pressing issues that the industry is actually facing. The plan that we have in the last financial year has actually assisted us in improving in terms of the utilization of funds within the Mine Health and Safety Council, also ensuring delivery. And we consulted with National Treasury in terms of what needs to be done or what we are planning to do going forward, including the current financial year. National Treasury has actually cautioned us in terms of the speedy rate that we were planning to utilize the surplus fund, indicating the state of finances in the country, that we probably need to delay some of the projects. Make sure that the surplus fund is utilized in a much longer term to ensure financial sustainability. There's also an indication from Treasury that there might be zero appropriation from National Treasury during the current situation that the country is finding itself in terms of availability of financial resources. So we will actually be revising our spending plans in line with the advice that we have received. In terms of the Auditor General, we've received unqualified audit report, Chairperson. Unfortunately, we couldn't achieve the clean audit as we indicated that we want to ensure in this current financial year. It was mainly as a result of a technical accounting error. You know, in terms of how we needed to deal with the issue of refund that was given to the mine in terms of the classification. So I think we had engagements with the AG and we have agreed that in future if we had to deal with that, what is it that we need to do? I think going forward as well, Chairperson, maybe if there are areas that we are not sure of, we'll make sure that we consult the National Treasury as well on time before we can start doing anything to make sure that at least we are on the right track, especially the areas which appear to be grey or we are not sure of. And most of the findings that we had, we've addressed most of the audit findings, Chairperson. Chairperson will be hosting an honorable members, the Mine Health and Safety Summit in November, the 18th and the 19th of November this year, to review the commitments that we have made in 2014 to check how far we've moved in terms of improving occupational health and safety in the mining industry. Unfortunately, when it comes to fatalities, we are not doing very well, Chairperson. We've actually regressed. So tomorrow there is a workshop that is planned with the mining company's CEO and various principals to say what actually happened, how did the wheels come off, how do we ensure that we are back on track in terms of the commitments that we've made in terms of the milestones of improving occupational health and safety in the mining industry. So it will be held tomorrow, that workshop, Chairperson, which is going to be forming part of the inputs to the Mine Health and Safety Summit later in the These are basically the commitments that have actually been made by the tripartite stakeholders and the principals, that when it comes to fatalities and injuries, year on year we'll be reducing them by at least 20% for us to get to the ultimate goal of zero harm. So it touches on serious injuries, lost time injuries, elimination of noise-induced hearing loss, which is one of the major occupational diseases that we have in the industry, reduction and prevention of TB, HIV and AIDS, and the issues of exposures in terms of the various hazards. We've also have started in the implementation of the program of action in terms of the commemoration of mine workers who lost their life as a result of mining disasters. The plan of action for commemoration includes the tracing of the families of the deceased mine workers. We're also looking in conjunction with the MQA skills program to benefit the beneficiaries of the deceased, and already MQA has made some commitments after we had a commemoration of the Kinross disaster in terms of the skills development. So MQA and the mine are actually finalizing the plans in terms of actually implementing those skills programs. So it will also include documenting of disasters in terms in the form of books, audiovisual documentaries, in making sure that we are learning from the past, and we afford the deceased mine makers the dignity that they deserve. So it's some of the initiatives that we have. In doing that, Chairperson, we've established a steering committee which the National Heritage Council is part of it, and we've done a lot of consultations with the Department of Arts and Culture in terms of how we need to go around this. We're also going to include establishing walls of remembrance for the deceased mine workers. That's the end of my presentation, Chairperson.
Thank you. Done, Mr. Mzuzu.
Well, Mr. Lalo, we're done, thank you.
Okay. Honorable members, remember I said program two, we're parking it for dealing with it simultaneously when we deal with the input by Mine Health and Safety. Can we deal with the overall presentation by the department, bar that section that deals with program two of the department? We will come back to it, not together with the Mine Health and Safety Council. Babu Mkwena? Babu Lorima? Babu Schmidt? Mamu Mafolo? Okay.
Did you say we're dealing with them together or we're dealing
with
the
department? No. We'll come back to everything of the department.
Yes.
Except program two.
Oh.
Program two is we're gonna deal with it with the recent presentation that has been made by Mine Health and Safety Council.
Because some of my issues I think relate to.
Okay. We will deal with Mine Health and Safety Council together with the program, with the program two, which is Mine Health and Safety.
That's fine.
You heard even when he was making a presentation, he was saying Mr. Mbonabi has already touched on, which means there's an overlap of work that is being done.
There's a lot of that. Okay, so because you touched on the issue of rock forms, right? And one of the key professions in the mining industry that I think it's mining industry and construction that is not taken very seriously is the area of geotech, right? Which strangely enough, and we've put in legislation to make sure that it's taken seriously. And I, you know, it's a legal appointment. When you're a geotech engineer, it's a legal appointment. And I think the mining industry tends to implement geotech engineers simply to comply. But in the actual work condition, they don't listen to the advice that they get from geotech. It's often, it's like in business. In business, ethics is the last thing you consider. In the mining industry, they put in the geotechs, but they don't actually listen to what geotechs have to say. And that becomes a problem because, you know, they're the ones who deal with rockfalls and landslides and so on and so forth. So I'm not sure what one needs to do to make sure that the industry takes that profession extremely, extremely seriously. The same problem exists in construction as well. So whether it's a legislation issue or whether we empower the inspectors to make sure that geotechs are listened to, I think it's just something to think about. That's one. Two, you mentioned illegal mines, right? I'm strongly of the opinion that we need to start now formalizing illegal mines. We need to do that urgently because, one, it will give, in the same way that there's discussion around formalizing sex workers, it gives you the chance to regulate that industry. And you are able to then monitor who's being employed and so on and so forth, right? So the formalizing of, and also what it does is it deals with other crime issues, because in order for these illegal mine owners to sustain their businesses, they then have to venture into gun running, human trafficking and drug trafficking. I mean, you know, so it will assist perhaps in eliminating those issues as well. And then, okay, that's a health and safety issue. Yes, and then also in that same vein, the tailings, especially from the older mines, right? They've got residual product that has been sitting there, and we now have technology to take that product and create businesses. You know, we can take some of that residual and create businesses for smaller entrepreneurs and so on and so forth. So, you know, I think we need to now start going on a big scale, because we are on a drive to try and employ people and create massive industry and so on and so forth. So in that line of thinking, perhaps we need to now start thinking about making it, sort of mainstreaming it. And then there's the contentious issue of Xolobeni. Now, I'm not sure what the involvement of the department is there, but, you know, and I think it goes to the how we regulate the industry in such a way that it benefits ordinary South Africans. That Xolobeni issue has been contentious for a very long time. People are dying. You know, we've had a couple of people dying now over the past couple of years, and it's sad. And I'm not sure, because the people of Xolobeni are complaining that the department is sending people there not to help them, but to victimize them. They send the police there not to assist them, but to convince them to curve in on the Xolobeni mine issue. So I wish the department and the Department of Tourism would speak to each other so that we can go and clean that issue once and for all. Because it's becoming extremely dangerous for ordinary South Africans there. So I would plead very strongly that the department physically goes there and speak to the Department of Tourism, because they are heavily involved in that Tolobeni issue, and deal with the issues there. And then we in the EFF are of the opinion that mines should be nationalized, right? But that's not the stance of government at this point in time, and we understand that. But I think there's an overwhelming understanding that mines need to now begin to help us. And it's not going to happen if we're going to leave that responsibility with the private sector, because the private sector, their core business is to make money for themselves, right? You started on the program of owning a coal mine. I think it's a coal mine, a state-owned coal mine. So, and this is probably my first question. Are there moves to perhaps acquire more shares in privately owned mining companies, or to own more mining companies, so that we are in control of what happens to these mines? Because, you know, the big problem is that they are not in our hands. You know, we keep harping on the issue of illicit financial outflows precisely because we're not in control. And perhaps, you know, we need to have more control. And, you know, it's a protectionist stance, but we kind of have to go there at some point. As a developing country, there's nothing we can do to help that situation. So that would be my first question. And then I think the other issues, I'll throw them in the health and safety issue. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Lauren.
There's a number of questions. And I'm just going to... This is the non-safety ones, right?
Yeah.
Okay. There was a report from the committee staff suggesting that it would be helpful to get an annual report from the Environmental Mineral Resources Inspectorate. Could you give me a response to that? Do you agree that it would be valuable? Do you think it's possible? How would that happen if it was to happen? There was some information about IT and internal IT. This was on slide 30. I don't have it in front of me here. I just wanted to know where SAMRAD falls. Which program does SAMRAD fall under? So I'd like to ask a question about that. And maybe you'd like to comment on SAMRAD, because all indications are that it is not working. I can't get into it. People applying for licenses tell me they can't get into it. Somebody can, perhaps. Who? There was a comment about significant arrests being made in terms of illegal gold mining. Could we know more about that? At what level are those arrests? Is there still a 24-hour guard at the George Harrison Heritage Site? Back to the question of SLPs. How easy is it to get SLPs? Can anybody ask for them? Are they published as a matter of course? Whose responsibility is that? The 129 closure certificates. Now, I'm unclear about this. Does that mean that those 129 mines are now not liable for any future environmental damage? I'd also like to know whether we can get a list of those 129 closure certificates that have been issued. In terms of rights applications, how often does the DMR suggest BEE partners to rights applicants. And then on to the procurement sessions. I'd like to know a bit more about how those sessions come about. Who asks for them? Does the DMR suggest to companies that they attend them? Do companies ask the DMR about those? Is attendance voluntary? That's it from me for now.
Thank you, Joe. On page 6, you indicate that the mining tax revenue average is about 20 billion rand a year. Does that include pay as you earn? Does it include site? What does it include? Because the figures I've seen recently average is about 14 billion, but that excludes site and pay as you earn, that's direct taxes. Then the Dennis Tax Commission has now recently made Tax Commission made recommendations recently. It has to do with inter alia, I think, changing the liability from gross revenue to profit, or the other way around, from profit to gross revenue. That's the one issue. Did you make any input into the Davis Tax Commission? Are you happy with those recommendations? Secondly, I see on page 8 the shrinking number of people employed in the mining industry. Now, are there any plans afoot to ensure that we increase rather than maintain what jobs we have? We seem to be on the defensive instead of trying to promote jobs. Is there any positive thinking along those lines? Thirdly, I've seen a Mining Weekly article recently on Lily Mine, and it has to do with Vantage and Afrikaan. And the picture it sketches there is not good, to say the least. In fact, what you sketch here is much more rosier picture than what is sketched there. And I've got it here, but in short, it seems that due to the funding process problems, the possibility of moving or accessing that container is slightly remote. And that is not mentioned here. What is the status quo at the moment? Because I seem to recall a figure of 140 or 160 million, which has been quoted to access that container, which is not going to be covered by the department, and it seems to me Afrikaan is not going to fund it. Vantage seems to be on a business rescue, so that's how I understand the picture. Maybe your comment could be helpful. Then 38 on your 204 rights permits issued to HDSA. It's the core function, in my view, of the department. I think the department, it's their duty, it's their core function. And one would expect more detail in this regard. In other words, not just a big figure, one figure. A figure as to 26% empowered companies, 50%, etc., etc. I think we need a better breakdown of those figures than just one lump, all lumped into one figure. It's more important than just giving it in one line. That's how I see it. So could you just give us a better breakdown on that figure? Then the stakeholder declaration, there was something I wanted to ask there, but it basically has to do with how many applications have there been by companies to extend the 60-day consultation time? In other words, is it 2, is it 20, is it a realistic figure, is it 200 companies applying for an extension of the 60-day? One then has a better indication as to what exactly is happening. How many companies are applying for Section 189A consultations? How many have been extended consultation periods of 60 days? Then, lastly, we once got a figure, I think it was, for the environmental rehabilitation. I think that outstanding figure was something like, and I'm talking a correction, was something like 50 billion rand. And we worked it out, it was something like, at the current rate, It was going to take, I don't know how many hundred years, but it was probably at the rate of 0.001%, something ridiculous. I can't remember what the figure was, in terms of rehabilitating those 5,000 or 6,000 sites. It doesn't seem to make any impression because every year we get 50 sites. I mean, 50 sites out of 6,000 or 5,000 sites is not making any inroads. So maybe there's a different strategy to it. Maybe the mining company is reapplying for certain mining rights, old order mining rights. I don't know. But there should be a strategy to address this in a much more speedier way, I would guess. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation. Slide number 25, I just want to know if those projects are being funded by mining companies or the department itself. And then we have been sitting with this problem of vacant posts. Time frame to fill those vacant posts. The posts that are abolished, were they not budgeted for? I want to know that. There are 50 or 60 inspector trained, 38 not hired. What are you doing about those who are not hired? Because private companies may absorb those inspectors. Status of the women in mining strategy. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. It's not easy to catch up the language and all, but this is very interesting. And coming from Skukulian land, where there are lots of mines and emergency mines in Skukulian in Limpopo, I can identify with what is said here, because most of the evidence I have on what is happening in the mines is more anecdotal, and and it doesn't tally with what I hear here anyway. But there's still a lot to learn going forward. I just want to know the acid drainage in the of water in the mines. Who is responsible for it? Is it mining, or does it fall in the Department of Environment, or is it Water Affairs? I haven't heard anything about it during the inputs here by the department, and I haven't heard anything about litigations against the department, or what the department is litigating against the partners or other people that they work with, because this is a serious thing with many government departments. I haven't heard anything about that. And yeah, I think that will be all from me. If I could just know if there are no litigations against you or the other way around.
Okay. No, thanks, Slalo. We'll respond to the questions that have been posed, and the colleagues will also come in. Okay. All right. Thanks, Slalo. On the rock falls, the geotech questions. Geotech and rock engineers, Mr. Mbonambi will respond to that on what we are doing in terms of the legislation in that aspect. On illegal mining, just to help on illegal mining, the challenges that we are facing in illegal mining, especially currently in the Gauteng province, if you move from Ekurhuleni to Roodepoort, they're mining old areas, and those areas, you'll see in some of the areas there's been a growth of industrial and residential areas in those areas. Now, however, there's areas that we've identified as a department that we can mine, or they can be mined, especially the gold mine. So we have issued mining rights from Ekurhuleni to Matholesville. We have issued mining rights. There are companies that are already, some of them are mining in those areas, including CRG. But some of the areas, like the Langlachter one, The Langlaagte one it's one of the first gold mines that happened in South Africa in the late 1800s. So we've agreed with the Johannesburg Metro that it should be turned into a heritage site some time ago. So it's on. If you know Main Reef Road, you'll see that there's a lot of infrastructure. So on top of the old underground Langlaagte mine, there's now infrastructure, including roads, including businesses. You'll see there's businesses as well there. Now, the challenge with that area is, and not only that area, but from Ekurhuleni where there's infrastructure, the illegal miners are digging pillars which are supporting the infrastructure. Now, in one of the roads, in fact, there has been some caving, we are informed. It is currently managed by Joburg, together with the Joburg Metro. So, yes, there's areas that we've identified where we said they can be mined, but there's areas that you can't mine them, really, because if you mine them, then you collapse the infrastructure, including houses and the roads. Some people are even suggesting that you even the FNB Stadium, you might collapse it, you know. So I think, yes, we agree, including the dams. If you drive around the main highways in Joburg, on the M2, on the N1, on the M1 as well, if you'll see some parts that there are dams, that we call it slime dams, that are being worked. So there is a program we have been promoting as a department that those dams should be worked, including in Benoni as well. If you take the snake off ramp, there's a big dump on the left, on the N12 side. You'll see they're mining it as a crusher. So we are promoting that. But I think for us, which is key, we're working together with the Council for Geoscience, where possible to rehabilitate and seal those holes where possible. But where we can mine, we definitely will promote mining. Not only that, but also in the coal mines. There are dams that can be worked. Right, and the issue of Kolobeni. In terms of Kolobeni, for us, it's very regrettable that the sector went through what it went through during that time, and the alleged loss of life. The loss of life which was there. I personally went there earlier on with my colleagues. We were there. We listened to the communities. We listened to the traditional leaders there. What are their issues? And since then, there's been a moratorium that was issued by the minister, I think for 18 months. So Mr. Rapela will touch on it because of those challenges, to try and work out those challenges. The department has never sent anyone there. We went there ourselves to engage. We've also taken the local municipality as well to understand what are the issues so that we can really work together with them. And on the mines, whether we own some shares and we have the what we call the AEMFC, the African Exploration, Mining and Finance Corporation, which is currently at SOMCO, as we clearly indicated earlier on. They own some mines. They are mining currently. They're mining coal. In fact, they made a profit last year. They are supplying the coal to Eskom. Now they have different strategic projects that they're working on, mainly coal, phosphate, silica, silica for use to glass and so forth. They have projects there. But not only that, we have Alexco, which is in the diamond side, obviously administered through the DPME, the Department of Public Enterprises. We have PIC. PIC is actively involved in the mining space as well. They have significant investment, including on Lonmin and other mining companies. So government, through that, is also involved. Similarly, we have IDC. IDC, they've heavily invested also in the mining space. But yes, there is a drive by government to be heavily involved in the mining space directly and all through the share options as we have highlighted. On the report, Honorable Lorimer, I think Mr. Rapela will touch on whether the suggestion, the recommendation of the annual report on environmental issues, including on the IT SAMRAT issues. We also have our IT person here who can touch on it. Significant arrests on illegal mining. I think there's been most. We must admit that most of the people arrested in illegal mining are the. There's five levels of illegal mining. There's the lower one, which goes to the, which are basically the people who are doing the digging, and the highest are the local and international syndicates that fuel the what we call the zama-zama, the illegal mining. So previously, historically, they've been arresting the lower levels, even today. But what is encouraging now is law enforcement agencies are now starting to arrest syndicates. Last year, they've arranged, it was in the media, they've arranged a syndicate in Kempton Park. They were dealing with illegal gold to the tune of about $437 million. 3 months ago, they've arrested a person with gold worth about $50 million. So we are seeing more and more of arrests at a high level. Mr. Mbonambi also touched on the issue of engaging with the UN, because we take it as a crime. There's different types of illegal mining. There's this Zama-Zama, there's also the one for subsistence mining. Those ones we try and help, as colleagues have said. But there's this international one that we are dealing with. We took it to the UN, we are trying to work with the markets to try to ensure that we cut the markets. That's the main issue there. Yes, there are arrests, but we agree mainly they are at the lower level, not much on the syndicate level because of the complexity of the need. But we are working together, including with the regulator as well, to assist the law enforcement on those issues to make sure that at that time, at that high level, it happens. And then on the issue of SLPs, Mr. Rappel will respond to it, the closure certificate as well, the procurement, the BE issues, the Dennis Tax Commission, probably Mr. Rappel can also touch on it. And the shrinking of jobs, we agree, Honorable Schmidt, that we should not focus on the saving jobs, but to promote investment so that we must create our jobs. There are programs that we are running with the department. What is key, Honorable Schmidt, that we must highlight, it was the issue of the legislation certainty, because that's one of the key issues that the investors are raising, and we are very grateful that the portfolio committee is prioritizing this matter, because it's one of the matters that the mines, but also the petroleum sector, is raising. So we must finalize that. Then it gives us certainty. But beyond that, the other projects Mr. Rapela will definitely touch on that we are working on in terms of the one environmental system, because people, they were saying that we have a high turnover. Used to have a high turnover of issuing the rights, including the water license. So I think Mr. Rappel can talk more on it. On Lily Mine, we fully agree. For us, it's a very painful and a sensitive area. Mr. Mbonambi will touch on what we have been further doing in terms of this. In terms of the figures, we are not. We are engaging with the business rescuer and the CEO. In fact, as Mr. Mbonambi was saying, we were there on Friday as well to say, what are the figures? Where are we? You know, he said it looks promising, they'll get money. There's engagement with the IDC to try and really help. But we are involved as a department to try and facilitate the process. And on the HDSS as well, Mr. Rapela will also touch on that. And the 60-day extension, Mr. Rapela. The environmental fee of 50 billion, Mr. Mwazi, can also touch on that and the work that is done in terms of the sites of illegal mining. Slide 25, Mema follow on mines, the projects, whether it's the mines or the DMR, government will touch on it, and vacancies as well. I think on the finance side, I think you'll touch if CFO. And the 38 not hired, Mr. Bonambi will touch on it. They were all hired, ma'am. All those liner inspectors were hired by Mr. Banambi will touch on. Status on women's strategy, so we'll respond to it. AMD, Mr. Mwatsi, litigations against the DM are Mekamet and also Mr. Rapella here. Mr. Rapella, CFO Mekamete, Mr. Mbonambi, and Dadem.
Thank you, DJ. I'll start with questions asked by Honorable Mukwena relating to dams being a platform and holding an opportunity for job creation. We agree. But also want to emphasize that that there are some legal and regulatory issues that have to be resolved. And once again, the finalization of the MPRDA becomes key in this regard, because the gaps that we identified in dealing with matters pertaining to the tailings could also be resolved when the MPRDA has been finalized. The questions pertaining to Tolobeni were responded to, and just amplify that indeed there is an 18-month moratorium period that has been imposed. The Gazette is out for public comments, and the deadline for submission would be before the end of this month, and after which our minister has to consider the various submissions that have been made and come to a determination on what the way forward should be. It's correct that there is a need for stability in the area, and we've noted the proposal that the Department of Tourism should also be involved, you know, as part of weighing the economic options and finding a balance in that regard. We want to give an assurance that in the finalization and charting the way forward, will work with all the relevant stakeholders. The question that were asked by Honorable Lorimer pertaining to the modality that could be utilized or would be utilized for purpose of availing information or engaging on environmental mineral resource inspector program as part of the One Environmental System would take would be guided here, but what would appear perhaps more practical would be framing a report, and from that report will be guided by the committee with regard to how to take it going forward. The next question that was asked related to the list of closure certificates issued, that information be made available. The list is available because once the closure certificates are issued, that information, you know, can be accessed. But it's been requested, so it's made available. The link to that, obviously, when closure certificates are issued, it then implies that the right holders, by virtue of the certificate being issued, are now exonerated or relieved of the responsibilities or liabilities. The other question related to BEE, whether the department suggests BEE partners to applicants, and we have stated previously that we do not suggest BEE companies or partners to applicants. Having said that, we want to also emphasize that in the adjudication or analysis of transactions, we always ensure that there is compliance with the elements contained in the charters. So to an extent that there are shortfalls, right holders would in advancing transformation be compelled to comply. How they end up complying becomes a different matter, because it is a process that they have to run. The next question related to procurement session that have been convened by the department, whether they are voluntary and how they operate. What we need to outline at the outset is that procurement is part and parcel of driving transformation. And as the holder of a right, you are obligated to comply with the target pertaining to procurement, be it around capital goods, services. Now, what ordinarily transpires, this is an area where there have been a lot of complaints by entrepreneurs and communities around access to these opportunities. In various, or some of the localities, there are business forums or forum, mining forums where business people also participate. And from time to time, they would raise concerns and complaints pertaining to being able to access these opportunities to an extent of being able to meet basic things, being able to meet with the relevant procurement manager to compete fairly and evenly given the opportunities. And in other instances, challenges that they would raise pertaining to, getting to know about opportunities that exist at this mine. As a consequence of this, and also flowing from the summit that we had with the youth, focusing on transformation and procurement, this is also being embraced by business. When I say business, I also include the Chamber of Mines. We then went the route of convening sessions where we then meet with mines and in the various localities where mines operate or in Pretoria, with the view of affording parties an opportunity to engage. And one of the things that has been really a positive spin-off or outcome of that has been the opportunity for both the mines, especially at an executive level, to get to interact with those aspiring to enter the mining space, but also those wanting to render services to the mining industry, also being able to participate in the discussions and present whoever they are. Now, are they voluntary? Of course, we would invite companies, and we're not holding them as they're not ordered to come and make presentations. But there's been maximum cooperation, I must indicate, even at the level of the CEOs, because there's a benefit that has been identified in driving this process. Would encourage other companies to also follow suit and lend support to this, because it contributes immensely to, to driving transformation as well as ensuring that there is proper empowerment. And the complaints that we have to deal with from time to time get minimized. The Honorable Schmidt raised an issue pertaining to the fact that transformation is an integral part of our mandate, and a lot of information is required with regard to the 204 entities to whom rights have been granted, and more information is required with regard to who they are, because ordinarily there is a legislative framework that compels and require applicants to comply. And this, as we understand, relates to the list of the 204 entities to whom rights have been granted, if I do understand. We then entail availing that list to the committee. Okay. We'll do that. The other question related to social and labor plans, how readily available are they, and can they be made public? The response to that is that through following a process of access to information, ordinarily this is public information. But we had identified the challenge and also concerns that have been raised in communities by traditional leaders with regard to the ease with which they are able to access this information. Hence, in our presentation earlier on, having identified this as an area where there is a problem, we will then go the route of developing a regulatory framework or that would compel right holders to not only make this information public, but also on a periodic basis go back to where their stakeholders are, that is where they consulted at the time of application, and go and give those communities or stakeholders an account. We think this will help also improve a perception or an image of industry that could be operating in not so open a manner, and help deal with some of the concerns pertaining to commitments that may have been made, you know, in social labor plans, if those are there and not implemented. But we also need to indicate that whilst we're going this through, there are companies that are currently doing that. But we think that if it's more structured, and the outcome of that needs to be included in the annual reports submitted by mining companies as part of their social labor plan, it will really go a long way in terms of assisting in that regard. Information pertaining to the number of Section 189 as well as the, that we applied for by companies that are retrenching, as well as the number of those that granted the additional time for consultation post 60 days. If we were to be allowed just to consult and check with the CCME or the custodian of this information and make it available, we would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks. On the issue of slide number 25, on the ICT part, it is twofold. The mineral regulation is the business system owner, and the office of the CIO and the CIO is here, provides the support through the infrastructure and the technology required. We do have a help desk center at head office and regional offices for anyone who struggled to get access to the system. And I will ask Chairperson that if there are struggles, let's use that platform so that we can deal with it, because the system is working. We are obviously, like I've reported, working on integrating the system, and we are enhancing as we go along.
Thank you. Honorable Mafulo. The project, your question was in relation to the funding of those projects. Yes, indeed, the mining companies do pay for the, or maybe they sponsor the projects in the department. For instance, the PPE, this is now the protective equipment or clothing that is being done by the women in Beatrice Diff. That project has been funded by Jindal. And for instance, some of the bursaries, yes, some mining companies do fund that project, the bursary project, as well as the MQA. In terms of vacant posts, how long it takes the department to fill those posts, the requirement is that it be 6 months, but our target that we've set ourselves in the department is that we fill them in 4 months from the time of advertisement. The abolished posts, yes, they were budgeted for before, but because of the request that we had to in terms of finding funds for the department, we then had to release those funds that were budgeted for those posts. When the decision was taken then to abolish those posts, and that we would, as and when we have funds, then we would then release or fill those posts as and when they're required. The Women in Mine strategy, where the state is where we are with that, we are awaiting the inputs from the from MIDET, and once that is finalized, or rather those inputs have been received, then we will finalize the strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Msisa. On the question by Honorable Mkwena around the geotech and rock engineering expertise in our mines, I couldn't agree with you more, Honorable Mkwena, on that issue that we have been having challenges around rockfalls as an industry, and the issues around rock engineering. If I can just take you back that in 2002, with the challenges around the rockfalls accident at our mines, we came up with the regulations in Chapter 14, which required that at every underground mine where there's a risk of rock burst and rock falls, the employer must ensure that the input of a competent person is properly and timeously considered and integrated into mine design, planning, and operations, which was meant to address the issue around the rock engineering input into issues of mine design and planning as well as operations. But over the years, since that time, we have seen some improvement in terms of falls of ground. However, there are still challenges, as we have indicated, that falls of ground are still problematic. That's why in my presentation, I think on slide number 36, I've indicated that we have finalized falls of ground regulations. We reviewed falls of ground regulations again, looking exactly on that issue of rock engineering and geotechnical practitioners at our mines. Because one of the things that we have realized is that although Regulation 14.18 provides for input, sometimes this input is taken as a recommendation and it's not always taken as if it's an instruction. So with the reviewed regulation, we are changing those regulations so that these inputs are going to be instructions from a rock engineering practitioner so that we can see the improvement moving forward. And further to that, we have also picked up that in terms of the certificate of competency for rock engineering practitioners at our mine, historically it was conducted by the Chamber of Mines. And we are in discussions with these reviewed regulations to make sure that we transfer the same certificate of competency so that it can be under the Mine Health and Safety Inspectorate, which will then assist us in future if there are challenges. If those rock engineering practitioners are not complying, we are in a position in terms of our regulations to either suspend or cancel that certificate for those people who are not here. And lastly, we are working with MQA to make sure that we increase our pool in terms of rock engineers in the mining sector. And I think on the issue around formalization of illegal mining, I think my colleagues have touched on that. And the issues around the tailings and mining of tailings dams to provide more jobs. I think Mr. Rapela has also indicated of our efforts in terms of dealing with those issues. And the next question was around the arrest of illegal mining. Around, I think Mr. Msisa has addressed the issue around the arrest of syndicates and also made some examples of the arrest that we have made, although we have indicated that this matter it still requires more of a national multidisciplinary effort, and we are continuously working in dealing with those issues. And I think there was an issue around the 24-hour guarding of the Langlachte site, which recently happened last month. After that incident, which was caused by the fire underground in that illegal mining operation, we've requested the police and the neighboring mines to provide that 24-hour guarding so that at least we can prevent illegal miners miners from accessing the underground workings. Whilst we are having discussions with the Heritage Council in terms of the way that we can close that those holes once enough time has been given. Normally we give sufficient time that people must come out within a period of more than 14 days. So that's why we've provided that guarding of 24 hours, because it would not help if there was no guarding, because they will still go back again and the problem was still going to persist. On the issues around the Lily Mine, I've indicated on the presentation that the issue around Lily Mine remains very sensitive. The reports has indicated, I think Mr. Msiza has just touched a little bit on it, but the issue around the report about Mining Weekly, my understanding is that they are referring to our recent assessment of the vent shaft and the second escape route that was drilled when the first efforts of recovering the container were done, because we had to make sure that we assess those ones whilst the business rescue a practitioner is still soliciting funds, so that by the time we manage to get underground, we have an understanding of the situation of the underground conditions. So I think maybe the report might have just gone a little bit without giving the reasons as to why. It is not that it was the rescue was aborted, but it was just indicating that those infrastructures, it confirms that the previous plan, which I've indicated of sinking a decline and accessing the underground workings, will be the safest plan to go underground rather than to use those infrastructures that were there before, because of the fact that they've been compromised with further falls of ground and then deterioration in those areas. And then in terms of the learners, I think Mr. Msiza has indicated, Honorable Mofolo, on the fact that 2 years ago, we recruited 50 mining learners from historically disadvantaged who were going to be trained as learner inspectors. And then that program went for 2 years, which the 2 years was completed during the reporting period. Five of the learners managed to get the employment from the mines, and 45 continued with the program, which they finished last year, end of last year. And those 45, 38 of those ones, we have absorbed them into the inspectorate to undergo an assistant inspector program, whereby they can get their government certificate of competency so that they can be appointed as fully fledged inspectors. But they are going through, they've been absorbed permanently in the department. And seven of those required to be taken to University of Johannesburg so that they can do their BTEC studies, which will assist them to quickly get their government certificate of competence. So no one has not been afforded an opportunity from that program, but rather all of them have been accommodated. I think I've covered all the questions. Thanks.
Honorable Chair, I'm going to respond to two questions. The first one relating to the costing and management of derelict and ownerless mines, the second one dealing with the acid mine drainage. First, Honorable Chair, the department conducted a national strategy for the management and rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines in 2010, and that strategy was completed in 2012. The objective of the strategy mainly looked at three things. One, the compilation of inventory of derelict and ownerless mines in the country. Two, the prioritization of the sites. And three, development of an action plan. And once the study was completed in 2012, Council for Geoscience, which conducted the study, also was requested to cost the sites. And the estimated cost at that particular time was 30 billion rand, not 50 billion. In terms of the prioritization, to respond to the question, what then Council for Geoscience did was to identify all those sites which would pose serious, deleterious challenges to our communities and those which may pose safety issues. And amongst those which have been found to be a priority include your asbestos sites. So at the present moment, the department, the number of sites which we're referring to refers to, amongst others, your asbestos sites, as well as the holdings which are mostly located in your nearby communities. But that does not imply that we will not be also prioritizing in the course of time other sites too. That's in as far as the first question is concerned. The other question related to that also was the concern raised around the 50 sites, which seems to be the case in the year in question, where we have just rehabilitated. And to say, if this is the case, how long will it take us to be able to do this? With respect to the high priority sites, we anticipate that this should actually be completed within the next, say, 5-6 years or so. That's your high priority sites. And then from there, we will go into your less priority sites. Some of the sites are very far from the communities. Yes, there may be some problems which we need to, which may be necessary for us to look into that as a department. About the acid mine drainage. Again, in 2010, there was an IMC which involved our minister then, the minister in the presidency, the minister of science and technology, as well as the minister of water and sanitation. And the IMC, amongst others, one of their recommendations was the appointment of a team of experts, specifically to provide a guide as to the extent of the acid mine drainage, specifically within the Vaal Basin, and to also indicate what management mechanisms should actually be exercised and by which government departments. Now, the IMC report from the team of experts found two things, two areas of interest in order to address the acid mine drainage in the country. Firstly, the issue of treatment. And this was assigned to the Department of Water and Sanitation by the report from the team of experts. The second one was what we call ingress control. Basically, is the diversion of your water away from those areas where water could have actually come in contact with acid and thus acid mine drainage. And this responsibility of ingress control was assigned to Department of Mineral Resources. I must indicate, Honorable Chair, that during the period in question, that's 2014-2015, the department commissioned a study through the assistance of Council for Geoscience to map and cost all ingress points specifically within the Vaal Basin. That study has just been completed. Secondly, in the year in question, the year in question, the department conducted a pilot study to demonstrate the potential to showcase the impact of ingress control, specifically in your Vaal Basin. And for that, Honorable Chair, we, through the help of the Council for Geoscience, conducted had what we call Florida Lake Canal in the Gauteng province. And that has been conducted. And it has demonstrated, actually, that with maximal ingress control mechanisms, especially within the Vaal Basin, we can be able to drastically reduce the challenge of acid mine drainage within the specifically the West Basin. To this end, as we speak currently right now, the department is in consultation with the National Treasury as well as Department of Water and Sanitation, specifically to seek some funding mechanisms so that the ingress control responsibility as assigned by the IMC in 2010 could actually be realized from DMR. So that's my response, Chair.
Okay. I'm sure we will go now to the Mine Health and Safety Council, but before that, I think it's important to, at some point, to get this clarity. Maybe let me start here, Mr. Rapela. We might reach a stage where we no longer believe when you say you're going to help us with the information, because that track record, if we were to measure you, to audit you, on coming back with information, I'm sure you would get a disclaimer. So I'm sitting here, you promised us on the... I remember, you promised us on this sunrise matter, the breakdown of the rights. And the deadline was the 14th of September. Quite soon we are going to the 14th of October. That information is not here. And I remember that day you promised us much closer.
Next year, you
mean. You promised us very close. I said, no, knowing what is going to happen, I will extend to you until the 14th of September. So you'll bear with us, Joel. I know how sincere you are. But Cape Town is Cape Town. Sometimes when you are on the air, you may have forgotten what you made as a promise in Cape Town. So my main limitation is this one. The second thing, I think at some point we need to go back. And you may not answer it now. Look at, first I must say, it's not bad. You see, sometimes when you set standards, just accept you'll be measured in those standards. Like I made an example somewhere else. Where I come from, a traditional leader, you can't say he's drunk. You must respect the fact that the traditional leader is a symbol of a particular nation. But when you are drunk, we can say, no, this one, because you are a commoner, you can be drunk. But there's only one thing. A parent must always lead by example. Now, I'm not sure how much you can exercise authority if these entities consistently bring in clean audits, and you are just at the verge of delivering a clean audit. One day you will talk to them and say, but who are you to tell us? We should be the ones who are telling what should happen, because for us we can deliver the best. Which is going to take me to the next question that I think we should be looking on. Looking at both the report by the AG as well as the Dr. Nicole. The first thing, I suspect, you can ask me, there might be a problem between the distance between the department and the entities. And as we're speaking, I was trying to look at who sits where and for what purpose in some of your entities who represent the department. I'm not sure whether you're satisfied with the distance, because we must be honest, as honorable members, between the committee and what sometimes we get there, even from the entities, is management. In between, there are two layers. If not three, there is executive authority, there is the senior management, which is another issue one will come to. Then there is the management of the entities, which is the board. Now, understanding the, I won't make an example of anywhere, sometimes the powerless nature of the committees that must go through long routes. Somewhere, I think, we, don't you think, if the question, there is a need to have a concrete, for instance, I can tell you sitting here, when you listen to Mine Health and Safety Council presenting, you can see the close proximity between them and Mine Health and Safety program. But the rest, I can't get a sense that when someone speaks, there is a certain, I think it's the point that Honorable Mkwena was asking, who takes responsibility for not just the a particular operation, who takes responsibility? If you are sitting with MinTech, is there a way where MinTech is directly attached on a specific program of the department that therefore there can be an accountability mechanism? I can't get this. So I'm saying, looking at the proximity, that's point one. Point two, in the report of the AG, it raises concern about vacancy rates. But amongst other things, it says on senior, I read that thing, it says on senior management. But it's not only in the department, it says department and entity. Now, what is the current status? And I must say this thing, take no offense for it doesn't affect you. It affects them. You know, I went to that, what was that, the Diamond Indaba. And as I was sitting, some body gets introduced as the chair of the board. And there is a new board. And then I said, okay, like a lab, let me keep quiet, not ask. But the person may remain with a very negative attitude that this one is a chair, he never even greeted me. I didn't know he was a chair. The last time I remember, almost all the boards, I think, except Mine Health and Safety Council, were active, were an extension. What is the current status now? What is the current status? So I think it's important just to get what is current. Second, what is the current status with the senior management of the entity? I think we'll make comments about the fact that even on your side, you know, if I was still sitting that side, or must get some advice from Advocate Schmidt, just to advise, to have a department operating for almost close to 12 months, the first problem that you might have is that the level of confidence. You see, when I act, you don't have confidence in making sure things happen. So some of these things, possible that if you had someone who was strong enough, you could have got all of you, could have got a clean audit. I can't say that, not that I was avoiding to say in the AG, but I'm saying maybe you could have got that clean audit. Now, at the senior level of administration, I'm not saying, that's why I said I could have represented. During our days, we knew how much you must act, and if you are, after that, we can go and represent you successfully. But I'm not saying ask me as a lawyer, you can't do that, even at a fee. Two, I think the last time I checked in, where is this? They are going to come, the regulator, the CEO, Rapoa, had left. And you extended. Now, I'm looking at the periods because, to me, there would have been an assumption that in that period of extension, then they were processing so that whoever comes in can be able to take the ropes going. Now, in between, because part of the issue as a committee, what we must look at, is not whether we have done right now. Look at a projection that whether what is happening now will not have implications when you come back here. And when you come back here and then you stay, hey, it's because of that. We're coming, this man knows, I told them last year. And now when you look at the records, they are actually saying exactly what we feared before. Now I'm trying to check, what is the current status administratively? What is the current status in relation to your entities, both by authority, also by operation? CGF, I think, was in a similar situation where there was no CEO, there's an acting CEO. And I'm sure the CEO is acted even more than you, that you have acted. Now, I'm just looking into those issues because they may sound like minute, but they have got serious administrative implications. The second part on that question of confidence is the fact that when you move the chief inspector of mines, ne? Is that so? Am I correct? That's why I don't want to deal with the police because I'll mention wrong rankings. Now, when you move that person in an acting, it actually means there must be someone acting below. And in this case, it's Mr. Mbonambi. It actually means where Mr. Mbonambi was, there is someone who is now acting in that position of Mr. Mbonambi. Then we sit here and maybe probably watching a movie because it's a level of actors. The problem, it can create lack of confidence and competition about why this one is it and why that one. Because the lower you go, the more competition. It may be very easy to pick up at the top, but the lower you go, the more competition emerges, the more demoralization and sabotage amongst your staff personnel emerges. I think it's important to get that issue. I know you are coming to the mining charter. Let me leave that one here for now. Leave it aside when you come in. I'm happy. You see, when you say this thing of illegal mining, it was... Now it actually means the estimated costs are just going up. What you are not mentioning on the estimated cost is the fact that in some areas where you thought you have sealed, they've actually started to redo the work on the sidelines, and therefore actually means you have to return. I don't want to say like one area where there were houses built and then they were to put them down and then bring in new houses. I'm just saying, to what extent is or looking at a high-tech mechanism. I heard the one that Ubaba Msiza says, the pillars and so forth. But to what extent have we looked at the best mechanism that can address this problem? Fundamentally from the point, this one is Ubaba Mkwene, is going to be, it requires the committee to iron itself out. Or what I could say, we are still trying to canvass views from members and see whether we can have consensus to treat this issue of illegal mining as an immediate issue, because there are two issues. I think generally we'll have to look at one issue, that it is a fact. For whatever way we surely there is a need to have a consideration of the legislation in whatever form, whether it's doing enough. Whether it's doing enough, because the other biggest problem is that it doesn't only affect mineral resources. It's a multi faceted exercise. But I'm just saying, if you look at different models that can address this thing, because in some cases, what you calculate as cost still remains as it was before, because in the same area where you thought you have put everything to rest, it's still the entry point for illegal mining, because what you thought you were doing in favor of blocking people, it has become a signal that there is production below. So we can't keep on doing the same thing when the natural sense is not working for us. Is there any different model that you are looking at, which could include, not in totality, which could include on, because that's what we said, which could include amongst other issues, on how do you look at this question of small-scale mining as just a one contributory factor? There is an issue that of the judgment that was made in the Supreme Court in Bloemfontein on the issue of strengthening the legislation. And that was an instruction, by the way, to the department, strengthening legislation around the issue of illegal mining. Is there any serious initiative that is being taken? I think those to me, as then, what I don't get, and I must say this thing with an extreme caution, in part of the oversight where we have gone, and thanks, Mr. Chabeleng is here, Honorable Chabeleng, because they always say you are the culprit and co-opter. KZN in particular, I think if I'm not mistaken, Limpopo, and Northwest to some degree, part of the problem, Mpumalanga, when it comes to mining communities, is the west. What are the mechanisms that continuously build relations between mining communities, traditional leadership? Because in some of these areas, illegal mining, we have to look, I'm not saying this perfect, in some of these areas, illegal mining is as a result of fights over those who have got authority. When you can't identify, I think there are many of these cases where there is a fight either on the royal house as to who is the actual person who must be a traditional leader. And in the process, it then frustrates the process of the department on what has to be done. Are there mechanisms to look on this issue beyond just DMR? Because I think part of these things, we are not going to resolve them if DMR is only looking at this thing when the problem is there's got nothing to do with mining and there's got more to do with the determination of the actual authority in the community. Whether a traditional leader, whether it's a, what is called the, these who represent the land, CPAs, or whether it's trust, community trust, and so forth, or tribal, well, in some areas, even tribal councils are at war with the traditional leadership. Is there a mechanism that is being worked to make sure that that issue on its own, I think there is a case in Limpopo that is similar to that, if one remembers very well, where the traditional leaders is that it's not clear now how did the company receive a, it does have a mining license, but they say the mining license has been received irregular because the community doesn't know. So it has got nothing to do whether it went, went. So I'm just looking at, have you looked in your counterparts in within government on how best there can be collaboration so that the issue of mining licenses, I think that's another, it's not just reduced to SAMRA to put an application and then down the line someone gets an application, then there's chaos. Is there a mechanism that you are looking at? I thought, Honorable Lorima, you wanted to make follow-ups. Okay, Honorable Smith, Honorable Lorima.
Yes, Mr. Chair. What you've touched on, I think we've spoken to about briefly, and that is there seems to be a lack of standardization by the department as to, for instance, as you mentioned, CPAs and how you deal with companies deal with tribal authorities. And there's a constitutional court ruling between exactly between the CPAs and traditional authorities, which the Constitutional Court indicates its preference. But my concern is, and basically what I'm asking, and that touches on what you said, the most extreme example has now been quite recently indicated in the media, in the Babu-Bamakhale community, where once a mining company is paid millions, I think 700 million rand, if I remember correctly, to a D account, whatever D stands for, at a provincial government, there seems to be no control. And I'm not saying the department should have control. I'm not sure whether the department does have control. I'm not sure whether the department should exercise control. But there is a complete misspending of money to the worst degree. But that indicates the lack of standards or ways or standards, at least, guidance as to how to deal with communities, how to deal with money being paid. It's part of a bigger problem, if you understand what I'm saying. It's a societal problem. It's a societal structural problem. It's the interaction between the department and the community. It's the interaction between the department and the mining companies. And that touches on what the chairperson said. So that as a point of reference. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Honorable Lorim?
Just like to add to what my colleague has just said, the operations of the DMR can have very little credibility with communities like the Bapo now that their money has all been stolen by the provincial government. I know that's not the DMR's problem, but in effect it is. Okay, my follow-ups.
Look, I get told all the time that SAMRAD isn't working by people who try and apply for licenses. So I go in and I try myself to register. It doesn't work. So this morning I try again while I'm sitting here in committee. So I register, put my name, password, fill out the whole form, can't get in. I tried 6 times, can't get in. So, ma'am, sorry, I forget your name, but you said to the help desk. Guess what? I just tried 4 times on the help desk. That doesn't work either. You push the help desk button, nothing. You just go back to the normal screen. So, look, it may not be 100% dysfunctional, but it's dysfunctional enough to be a problem. And people who apply for mining licenses say to me, why can't we go online and find out information about mineral rights in South Africa when we can go and we can find like that for Mozambique and like that for Tanzania? What's wrong? This is a problem, and everybody tells me it's not a problem. From the department, they tell me that. Everybody else tells me there's a big problem. So I really think you've got to look at this again. To illegal mining, there is this very high-level task team comprising everybody from police to the chamber. Could we get us some kind of a report from them on what their achievements have been in the last 2, 3, 5 years? 2 cases were mentioned about arrests. Well, they're quite old, and I haven't seen any result from them yet. Who's gone to jail? Please, can we get some detail on that one? And I wasn't going to talk about this because it is dealing with annual reports out of the time period, but I just want to say again that last week I got a call from a colleague in Limpopo who told me that they saw 13 truckloads of sand coming out of a riverbed there, illegally mined sand in the biosphere, the Canyon to Kruger biosphere. Nothing's being done about this, it seems. Now, if an ordinary person on the street can go and see this happening, why are DMR inspectors not doing anything about it? As to SLPs, do we need a legislative change that these SLPs be made public? Can the department not simply go ahead and do that as a matter of course? How long will we have to, if we do need a legislative change, please explain why, and then tell us how long it's going to take. Because there are many communities sitting there who have mines on their doorstep, and they want to know what it says in the SLP because nobody's telling them.
Okay, Babung says, you will answer. Just know that you've got about 30 minutes now to, not you, but including council for. So I'm not trying to squeeze out of your answer. I was trying, Honorable Lorima, to swear that I can't get thrown my phone in for the application for the license. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay.
Sometimes they respond. Mizu, the member here, Kulumange, KCS theft, where the money was stolen from the community by the provincial government. If they have a case number, it would be very helpful.
No. You see, there is the case in, whether it's a case, there is investigation in the Northwest, which I think it was reported also to the department, on the royalties that were supposed to be going to the community. And it seems those, it's almost similar issue I was raising about between traditional leadership and community. But it's a matter that happened in a province. The public protector is working, it has been there in that community. For now, it has not pointed to anyone in terms of the provincial government, but names are being thrown in, or it also says the provincial government may have a knowledge. But what is clear is that in the fight, the traditional, what is traditional council where the Inkosi is involved, is the one that is directly alleged to have, how much is that money?
80 million.
No, it's not. It was 400, I think it was.
It's 700, it's four, it was 400 million, yes. Plus 280 million rands of interest, But the palace you have literally built was 80 million.
But the issue is that for now, currently, they say what is left in the account is 400,000.
170,000 or something.
Really? But the point is, it's a matter that is in the public protect that is dealing with. It's what they call it, the D account. As to what that D account stands for, so that is the issue that it relates to.
As long as that, and thank you, honourable members. In terms of the information that was requested, our sincere apology, honourable chairperson, will ensure that this urgently or as soon as possible is made available to the committee. And in terms of the the board membership and the appointment of management at entities, the department is seized with this matter. In fact, we are finalizing. Some of them have been finalized, especially the board membership. So we are working on it. So I would like to assure you that that happens, including the positions within the department, including that of the head of the department. There's been interviews that have been conducted as well. So the ministry is also dealing with it. Now, in terms of the issue of the ceiling of effective ceiling of hosts, we fully agree with you, honourable chairperson, that we have to strive to ensure that we come up with a measure of dealing with this matter. CGS will be presenting tomorrow. They'll touch on some of the measures that we have been through them doing to deal with this matter. I think one of, just to make a quick example, if honourable members could remember, when we went to, I think, between Ekurhuleni and Roodepoort last year, when we took honourable members to the illegal mining site. Previously, the way they were, CGS has been sealing, they will put a concrete sort of beacon on where they've sealed the hole, so that they must show any person who wants to develop around the area that there is a mine there. And it's normally shadow mines between Ekurhuleni to Roodepoort. So we don't want to build infrastructure and then there's a caving. Now they've changed, and you'll see with their presentation as well, they've actually changed that to show that. Now, we are also having challenges with illegal mining and the Free State, as our members have been there, and I suppose the mines there, the gold mines, have informed you of that. Now, previously, the way those mines were sitting there, the shafts, they will put one concrete slab at the mouth of the shaft when they are closing the mine, right? And maybe at a certain distance, they put another concrete slab from the mouth of the mine. However, the experience has been the illegal miners will then dig from far away to hole into that particular shaft. They take, risks, and I'm talking about 2 kilometer deep shafts. And unfortunately, there's been a loss of life because of people. You know, there's no infrastructure in those shafts, and they go down. So what the mines have been doing in that area, they've resorted to now to fill the shafts to prevent that from taking place. But now, I think what is key, honourable chairperson members, and as honourable chair has clearly indicated, because of the multifaceted challenges that come that deal with this issue of Zama-Zama, it's important that there must be a similar approach to it. And hence we are saying we should, beyond the sealing of shafts and rehabilitation, we must make sure that we deal with the issue of the market. Because if you don't deal with the issue of the market, there will always be a demand for it. And hence we are going to the UN and dealing with that. And I think the suggestion of NCSMT also maybe engaging with Parliament on this matter, they will clearly indicate, because some of the issues are very sensitive for us to say here, this is what they are they are really doing. And one thing from this matter, before I give my colleagues an opportunity, what we've noticed is that if you effectively seal off the host, there's other crimes that comes thereafter. You'll have housebreaking and so forth. So it's a complex matter which needs a really holistic, and we fully agree, Chairperson, and national level of coordination. And it's happening, and I think it will help that then confidence should be given on what are we really doing. But I think the key issue for us is the markets. If we can't deal with effectively the markets, it can be on diamonds, it can be on chrome, we'll be fighting fires, so to speak. So I think there would be a need probably for us to go deeper to see what are the issues and how do we deal with them. On the issues, probably Mr. Rapela can talk also on, okay, on strengthening of legislation. We agree. In terms of the MPRDA, we have made some suggestions on that bill on how we can respond to that judgment to strengthen the law. But not only on the MPRDA, there's other pieces of legislation which are administered by other departments. Mr. Mbonambi spoke to Mercury, for instance. It appears as if it's easy to access Mercury. So we are engaging with the respective departments to say, let's look at the law. How is it strong, or can we strengthen? So there's other areas of legislation. So under that NCSMT as well, there's a committee that looks at the legislation itself, not only the MPRDA or the Mine Health and Safety Act, but other areas that speaks to issues of undocumented persons as well. There's work that has been done in that regard. So, without going into details on those, but I think maybe it might help to have that engagement. I'll give the opportunity to Mr. Rapela to respond to the issues of communities, as highlighted by Honourable Schmidt, and what are we doing as government to deal with this matter. On the issue of Honourable Lorima, on the issue of the SANRAT. We appreciate your comments, and I think something that we will have to go back and look at some of the issues and see how we deal with it. And on SLPs, Mr. Rapela will also touch on that and illegal sand mining. Sorry, thank you.
Thank you once again, and afternoon, Honourable Chairperson and members. Let me start with the one on standardization of processes pertaining to consultation in view of some of the experiences or examples that Honorable Honours has cited. To firstly, indicate that what is happening or happened in some province like Northwest pertaining to the BAP is really regrettable, but there is a process underway to get to the bottom of that. And in other provinces, this issue pertaining to consultation is one that continues to be improved upon, because as and when there are new areas of jurisprudence pertaining, for example, to constitutional court rulings, were taken on board the outcomes of the Bengwenyama case, and as and when there are new areas pertaining to CPA's rulings from courts and other evolution of legislation, we continue to improve on those ones. It's a matter that is very, very delicate, and it's also fraught with sensitivity, because in some cases where there are some kinds of disputes, it can be a bit challenging. But as part of enhancing our business processes, as and when there are developments that merit us to strengthen, we do take those into account. The second question that was asked by Honorable Lorima pertained to SLPs and whether it would require amendment of legislation for them to be made public. And the simple response is, we are operating within the current regulatory framework, and we have identified the need to make adjustment to some of the regulations that are currently in place for us to be able to do that. So we would not For this one, we're not going to wait for the MPRD to be finalized. It's a matter that we have prioritized. Pertaining to the specific illegal mining of sand in a particular area, I don't have the details with me. I'll have to really follow up and find out on that one. What I want to highlight, though, with regard to illegal mining of sand, is that when the presentations have been made around illegal mining, they focused on your precious metals and diamonds and so on. This area is one that also poses challenges because it also creates conflicts also in areas where it is taking place in sometime in communities, and it's receiving our attention. As and when we receive complaints pertaining to illegal mining, irrespective of a commodity, but sand in particular, we do send out inspectors. All that we would need to urge is that we do have an email address for complaints pertaining to illegal mining that would need to be utilized, and we can share the details outside of this meeting. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable members, there is something that is an enemy of progress all the time. That is time itself. Thank you very much. I wanted to tell you, Honorable Larima, that probably maybe that Samrand is quite flexible on the type of individual. It depends when you're putting there, that's it. Okay. Mine health and safety. Okay, there are only two hands. Babu Mkwane and Babu Schmidt, Babu Lorim.
Thanks, Chair. I'll try and be quick. I got excited in your presentation. In your last, you mentioned your cooperation with arts and culture, which is my area of expertise, but you mentioned it in a different light. You see, the the gaping hole between corporate legislation and the actual practice of health and safety issues is the human factor, right? So you want to implement health and safety legislation on a people who have their own issues. So it speaks to issues of culture, language, personality issues, right? And that's where we fail in the mining industry and other industries, construction as well, to communicate health and safety, because we're not speaking to the human factor. We want to enforce legislation on them. And one of the key ways that we discovered in the creative economy is the use of art and culture as a tool to communicate health and safety issues. So I know, for instance, that we used to in the 90s we used to use a tool called industrial theater. Yes. And what it did is that it looked at human beings as human beings, and it communicated health and safety issues to them. I think then we were trying to communicate ISO 45,000 or something. I can't remember which one it was, but it was one of the ISO standards. And what it does is it helps people to it helps companies or corporates to communicate health and safety messages in a human way. You know, not in a legislative sort of paper, hard and fast way in which people don't understand. And I think that's where the Department of Arts and Culture needs to play its social cohesion role. And I think we need to now start formalizing the relationship between As a last resort, you know, we've been preaching this health and safety issue for years now, and we're making small improvements here and there, but it's not enough. People are still dying, people are still getting injured. So let's try a new way now of speaking to the Department of Arts and Culture and try and formalize that relationship so that we can find new ways of communicating this issue. That is one. Two, there's a mine that I visited doing research for a movie that I was doing a long time ago. And what we discovered in 3 years, they had a huge turnaround in terms of health and safety, because the new manager there, the mining manager, had implemented an incentive-based health and safety strategy, right? So where you used to have people who got injured, you would say to them, if you do this and you do that and you do that, you will get a bonus of so much, right? And so you know, people consciously become health and safety conscious because they know that there's money involved. And I know it's something that, you know, you kind of need to go into that protectionist mode again and control the private sector to help them to implement this thing, because if we don't, we're fighting a losing battle. So I think that's just another way. And then the third thing, which is my last issue, Chair, the Doctors Without Borders. They've been fighting with the mining industry, and I think they said that they've been speaking to the department as well for years now about the particular area in Rustenburg on HIV AIDS related diseases, but you know, in the mining sector itself, in the mining area, to the extent that one of the two areas that they're based in Africa is one Rustenburg, and there's another one further up in Africa. I heard your the improvements that you were talking about, but it seems that there's a particular problem in that area of Rustenburg, and I hope that we will put more effort into it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On your financial performance overview, when you compare your 2016 to your 2015 financial accounts, you probably spent in excess of 100% on your research expenses and at least 50% on your operating expenses. I'm not a mathematician, but that's how I read it. There should be some form of an explanation why that increased so tremendously on that score, page 24. And then it struck me here whilst you were busy presenting that if you go to the mines and you go everywhere else, the mines would speak about the best practice as determined by the Chamber of Mines. It hardly speaks of the Mine Health and Safety Council. And I know what your objectives are. Main objective is to advise the minister. So I understand that. But there's hardly any conscious reference to yourselves when you go to the mines and you go somewhere else. So I'm not sure whether you do this work behind the scenes, it looks like. But no one says, listen, the leading lights in this mine health and safety issues are, or is, the Mine Health and Safety Council. It looks like they're more referred to Chamber of Mines. Is there something you'd like to elaborate on that? Thank you.
I'm a little unsure. You talked about where we could find details of the Section 54s and Section 55s. Could you just tell me which report that's in? But also, I'm interested in whether or not the DMR believes that the way that Section 54 is being used constitutes a problem. And by way of background, I just want to mention again that the Chamber had a report the other day saying that it believed that 4.8 billion rands worth, I think, of production was lost due to Section 54s. So could you tell me how important an issue that you think this is? And do you have any plans to change the way that Section 54 is applied?
Thanks, Chairperson. On this commemorating deceased mine workers, we starting from which year? If we say you are tracing families of deceased mine workers in the SADC, are you starting from the day when gold mining started in Johannesburg? Those who died from then until now? Or are you going to have a cut-off day that will start, from this year up to now? Because I know there are families in South Africa who have lost loved ones in mines, and they don't even know where their remains are. So if there is a line where one can call, I'll be able to give that number to people who are searching for their loved ones who disappeared in the mines. Possibly around 1890-something or early 1900s. So this is giving me hope that those people will definitely get help. So, yeah. And, yeah, let us get the details so that I can give this information to those people. Thank you.
1890s. Everyone is looking for their ancestors. Look, maybe because this is what's just wrapping up, there has to be clarity in your presentation. Especially, let me start from the back on this issue of your commemoration. What is immediate? Or what is it that has taken place? What is immediate? And what is project? I think that's why Honorable Jabileng is asking that question. Because an impression gets created that instead of doing work, you are now on a search program. That first we have to find all of them, and then when we have found all of them, we will then decide. It doesn't give clarity. What is current? What has been done so far? And what is current? And what is projected? I did raise the issue about, for an example, the case of Evander, which we all know, beside all the other issues, that sitting there with 1,000 graves that probably we're still trying to see who can take responsibility for. But I think the point that also is very critical that is being raised is that what is that purpose? Because before you ask me to bring it back, the one that has just been launched on mining broken, what? Yeah, something to that effect. Which gives almost a clear account of to what extent has been mining built at the back of the sweat and sufferings. Particularly of African mine workers, both in South Africa and in the SADC region. Because as long as we are unable to bring back the dignity, I see all this commemoration, but what is the ultimate objective that you want to do? Because you can find my family, but would you recognize historically why in the first place I had to disappear? I'm just raising that thing because if there's something that is quite scary, we can know that this one is quite scary. The second one, I will say this, and I think you talked about a workshop, a tripartite board. I think one member was raising this thing. I wouldn't want to put it the way that Honorable Schmidt is putting it, but I think that is the best way, but let me just be straight to the point. Most of the time when you go on oversight and the issue of health and safety is presented at the level, lower level, is not presented as a tripartite or as a bilateral arrangement. And we know, you can't deny it, it's a fact that the final responsibility on mine health and safety or on safety is a responsibility of the employer. To what extent, though, are you as a council, but also even as a program of the department, to what extent are you ensuring that there is thorough understanding and proper facility? I'm not denying, I can't do what Babu Msiza is saying. But I'm sure we do live with some of these examples. I think one honorable member raised this thing in the morning that in the absence of a thorough orientation, even of the beneficiary, the risk is very high that without a buy-in, even of the beneficiaries, the results can still be the same in as much as you have put enough. To what extent that these tripartite workshops don't end here, they are able to say at the point of conduct, there is a direct knowledge and understanding of people. Because in those areas sometimes, with due respect, not in a bad way, sometimes the employers, they prepare the report literally, not in the way I now you can say this one represents labor, this one represents, now you come as a board. That board doesn't exist at a lower, so that there is, whilst on the other side they could be blamed, but there is collective responsibility about health and safety where it matters most. Then I think this is where we were talking about the question of the efficiency of meeting the target. That you can meet the target, but they may not be efficient where the primary is supposed to be effective. So I think to me that is one part. No, I think we hear that again. Even if we are male, they are going to agree with me, this honorable member. There is nothing wrong. You went to the treasury, just treat as if the treasury was assisting you. You still have to come. In as much as you have already decided to chow on this surplus, we still want you to come back. That's what we ask you to do. Come back, tell us, how are you going to spend? Do you want it as a broken, break it down. How are you going to spend this surplus? And what is sustainability out after that? And the reason I was saying, I told you, let's agree, in the submission, I don't know which page, I think even the department, there's been an increase in fatalities. I may not have facts, Babu Msiza, but I dare challenge you on the question of your, what do you call it, TB, whatever. Okay, let's put it, your occupational diseases, particularly on silicosis. And so when we're in Free State, we're still going to write that report. It says something else to the Department of Health in its own presentation. It shows something different. Not the point that we're saying that is incorrect, but your fatalities have increased. Don't you think that the reason you may have fatalities is simple because you are keeping money, not spending it, in order to have a surplus? Had you spent that money, probably one will argue and say the fatalities would have dropped. I'm just saying. That's why I'm saying, please bring it. So that you don't, I'll be frank and honest, we want to see whether are you not taking this old money, throw it to the center of excellence, and then you fold your arms. Then treasury comes back and there is no money, you've got capacity anyway to generate a surplus. Go back and generate another surplus for your own sustainability. So we need to see that, even if it's approved by treasury. Because when it comes here, unfortunately, sometimes it's not brought by treasury, it's brought by the AG. So you may just have to facilitate, when are you going to come here? Let's leave it will take us another day. But all what we want to ask Babu Mbonambi, Babu Msiza, in order for this committee to perform, I think that's what Honorable Schmidt was talking about. We don't have to be there to see operations every day. But I think even if it's a one page, a constant update to the committee on what the department and other stakeholders are doing on the question of Lily Mine. Because we can't sit and be an institution like Parliament and sound like everything is, you see, to you is sensitive. To someone out there feels that that institution is called Parliament doesn't really care about what has happened. Because here we're talking about the worst incident that has ever happened, where the whole world witnessed people just sinking alive with a container. Some of us may have different theories, say, hey, but sometimes it might be, is that difficult to find a container? Because the first issue is that to find the container. It seems more difficult to find a container than even to take people who are illegal. Although the Zama say they are more perfect than you. I don't know. I'm not saying that's the case. But they say they've got. But I'm just saying, just a piece of paper to say, here is an update. This is what we are doing. So that there can be a better understanding. We don't want to run that activity. But it will also be amiss of us not to develop an interest as an institution on what is being. I don't think some of us would be able to rest for the rest of our lives to know that there are people who just not just went on their own. They just sank with a container, and that container, big as it might be, it could not be found. Let's just start with the container itself. It can't be found. Before we talk about people, because they're much more small, and not by importance, but by size. So I'm just saying that issue, I think it will be something that we will appreciate at some point. That is the point, that the issues that one wanted to raise on this thing. Oh, so if you don't know, you cook this.
Thank you, Chairperson. To deal with the first question that was raised in terms of how we communicate health and safety issues, it's something that you are going to be looking at, that you are going to be giving it a serious attention in terms of how we do that, because mostly currently it becomes a compliance matter, so that at least when we use a different, that human approach that the Honorable Member has actually suggested, you know, it becomes easy, you know, for the message to get to where it was intended. It's something that we will be focusing on and come up with a program in terms of how we're going to communicate that. We also touched on the issue of the incentive schemes. As I indicated earlier, we have a culture transformation framework of the issue of which the issue of incentives and bonuses are a part. It's one of the pillars that we're actually looking at. Mm. So we currently have a project that is almost at the stage of completion, so that we can have some sort of guidance to the industry to say, how do you look into the issues of occupational health and safety so that bonuses are not solely based on production and productivity. So we are actually looking at that aspect. We should be finalizing the project. And we will be taking it to the mine in terms of promotion. It will be one of the guidelines. You know, it was a very thorny issue. You know, it took a bit of time than the time that was anticipated. It's a very sensitive issue, the issues of money and all that. But we've come to a point where we are almost finalizing that project. HIV and AIDS in the Rustenburg area is something that we are certainly going to look at. We've got a committee within Mine Health and Safety Council that mainly deals with HIV and AIDS issues. We'll take it to the committee to really look at it and see what can be done in that area. Less of reference to Mine Health and Safety Council. We agree that in terms of the awareness and the awareness of the brand of Mine Health and Safety Council, it's not what we want it to be. So that is why we are actually focusing on the promotion and creating awareness. And one of the conduits that we are actually using is the regional tripartite structures that we have in the regions, so that at least we can get as close as possible to people at the coal face. Because when you look at people who attend these forums, it's mostly your safety reps and people who are actually very close to the coal face. So I do agree that in the area of us being creating that awareness, especially of the brand of the Mine Health and Safety Council, we are not there, but it's something that we are seriously working on. We are also working in conjunction with, there's a unit within the Chamber of Mines, it's called MOSH, which means Mining Occupational Health and Safety, which is mainly for promotion of the best practice. So the programs that we've completed, the ones that we want to popularize, we've got an agreement, a memorandum of agreement or memorandum of understanding with them. We have a program in terms of the dissemination strategy that we've developed and a plan. So in that dissemination strategy, MOSH is a very critical stakeholder in terms of that. So we'll be closely working with them in terms of making sure that in terms of what we want to disseminate, it will be much more easy for us to do that through them. So it's something that we are actually working on. In this financial year, we've already started, or we've got projects that we're going to be. We've prioritized a couple of projects that we'll be working on. The tracing of families. It's a very difficult task. We agree. But in terms of the tracing, we're coming from the position where we are looking at the mining disasters. It's not just any family member that who has lost loved ones or who has been that needs to be traced. We are only focusing in for now. The focus is only on the mining disasters that we have experienced in the past. So we are focusing on that. Excuse me. We're looking at disasters around the 60s. We're going to be starting mainly, if there's the longest one, the Colebrook one, which actually happened in the 60s. So we, in terms of the engagements with the municipality and the locals around the Sasolburg area, there is an indication that some of people who were involved could actually be traced. So we're also going to be using the National Heritage Council in terms of the researchers that they have, so that they can be able to, we don't have capacity within Mine Health and Safety Council, but we've got an agreement with them so that to help us in terms of making sure that we are able to do the tracing. And then in terms of what is leading and what is immediate, what is the long term from yourself, Chairperson, the ultimate goal that we want to achieve is for those families, especially as a result of mining disaster, to find closure. So we will be immediately, we are looking at, in the short term, we will be looking at, as I indicated, the ones that were involved in the mining disaster. We will be looking at tracing the families, but what is more in terms of the benefits of people who are affected, we are also going to be looking at the number of programs in terms of skills development. We are working hand in hand with the Mining Qualifications Authority. So, yeah, it's a difficult one, but I think we're only starting now, Chairperson. I think there's a lot of refinement that still needs to be done in terms of the plan of action that we have. The buying in terms of the beneficiaries, people at the coal face, as I indicated earlier, we are actually using the regional tripartite forum to make sure that whatever decisions that we are coming up with at the senior level, at a higher level, we get those decisions communicated and the programs communicated at the level, at the regional level, where we also have the union's leadership or the union members who are involved, and the mines as well, to make sure that they, whatever we've decided on in terms of what needs to happen at the tripartite regional level, it gets to the coal phase, and there is also a buy-in as an outcome of the engagements that we'll be having on a regular basis. In terms of the expenditure of the spending plan on the surplus funds, Chairperson, I think we will be awaiting a date where you're going to be inviting us. We'll make ourselves available to also give feedback to the committee in terms of how we are actually planning to spend the surplus fund, but for the good cause in terms of occupational health and safety, to extend that whatever money you are going to be spending is going to really be benefiting the workers out there.
Okay, thank you very much. Saved by the bell. Tomorrow, don't ignore the agenda. Those who have not presented. Tomorrow, first come, first serve. We will only decide on the agenda on the basis as to who came first. Council for Geoscience, MINTEC, the regulator, the diamond trader, anyone I'm leaving behind? No. We are not going to detain you, Babu Dube. You heard me. But we want the council, the Mine Health and Safety Council, here tomorrow with all the capacity that it has. So we're not going to count who is present in terms of individual. The reason is simple. We have learned an experience here. We ask questions. Babum says, whatever happens, leave someone with power. Because say that the tail end, you then start to realize, no, man, we agreed or were convinced by arguments without knowing what more that is coming. So we might come back to you. And if you are not present, then it actually means it's a dereliction of duty on your part. So be on duty. Whoever you decide must have power, not to pick up a phone and then say, how do I answer here? On that note, thank you very much, honorable members. There is no luxury of time tomorrow. Those who are going to be presenting, we want information. You are, for now, you are on parole until tomorrow. Sungashoka posuti bye.
Oh, come on.
man. I've got. Yeah.
Wat een lange dag.
Wat wij het voor
het zin hè? Ik kom even op.
Dit is wat we alles maar aan de dag.
Nee, ik heb het niet gezien. Dat ben ik niet.
Where we can't breathe anymore. Thank you.